Good morning, friends and brethren. Very good to see you today. Glad that you are with us. Glad to see some visitors with us as well. We are especially glad to have you with us. Well, the lesson today is one that I intend and I hope to be a very simple lesson, really. It's kind of aimed at some of our young people and for parents and for those who have some influence with young people. It's that time of year again, back to school time. Yeah, it's here again. It's been kind of interesting just to watch the expressions of our young people when that came up. Interesting to kind of talk with some of them about, you know, are you excited? School starting this week or some next week, depending on where they live. And, well, one or two said, well, yeah, kind of excited. But, you know, most said, no, not very excited. You know, no, I'm not looking forward to it. No, I don't want to go back. And I understand, I relate. I mean, I was that way. I mean, summer vacation needed to last 12 months as far as I was concerned. I was never ready to go back, and I could never understand those kids who were excited for school to start again, because I never was. Not saying that that's good, I'm just telling you the truth. That's the way it was for me. And so some kids are excited as it's time for school, and there are some who are miserable. There are some who are looking forward to a new grade and new challenges. On the other hand, there are some who are kind of frightened about those same things. And there are some who are having to go to new schools this year, and they're not so sure about that. And there are some who said they've got new teachers this year, and they don't know what to think about that. But there's other big changes, too. I mean, there's no more staying up to midnight, you know, because you got to get up early. You can't sleep till 10 o'clock anymore. But you got to get up early and be ready for school. And so, you know, just the thought of back to school kind of invokes different feelings from different people. Some happy and some sad, some fearful, some excited, ready to conquer the world. I don't know where all of you are at, but maybe it's time for just a little bit of thought and consideration of back to school. And what advice, what wisdom can we give our young people to help them to prepare for school? What kind of practical advice can we give them? Well, that's the hope and the intent of this lesson. Let's start with this passage in Luke chapter 2. I want you to turn with me. Some of you know already what we're doing, where we're going. Well, it's a passage that tells us something about Jesus. Luke chapter 2. Sometimes we forget that Jesus was young too. That he was born just the way we are, and he grew up, I'm sure, with some of the same challenges that we've had to deal with. And in Luke chapter 2, we're going to verse 40 when it says, speaking of Jesus, and the child grew and became strong in spirit and filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was with him. And I just want to make the point that Jesus, just like us, had to grow up. Had to go through some of the pains that we had to deal with growing up. But he did that. And he managed that just fine. And in verse 52, the text goes on to say, you might recall the occasion when Jesus with his parents had gone down to Nazareth and they become separated in the way back. And anyway, when we come to verse 52, it says this of Jesus, that Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and with men. And just briefly, we see some things. We learn some things about Jesus, that there were ways that he had to develop just like we do. The same kind of issues I'm sure he faced that we do. But it was noted that he was growing in these ways, educationally or mentally, we might say. Physically, he was growing. He was changing. Spiritually, well, in that way too. He was already astounding some that he would talk to about things of a spiritual nature. And socially as well. He was growing in all of these ways, and he was only about 12 years old at this time. And I think it's just interesting to know and to think about these things with regard to Jesus, that he had to grow just like we did. And so, isn't that what we want for our children too? Parents? Grandparents? Isn't that what we want for our children to grow and develop in these ways? Which of these ways and which of these areas are most important? Well, they're all important, but I can't help but think and to notice the fact that spiritual development just seems to fall or make its way to the top of any consideration here. Spiritual development of our children is what supports the rest of their development. And if we do not provide spiritual development for our children, then I'm going to tell you something, parents, we've missed it all. So here's some things for us to think about and for our children to think about. As you're getting ready to go back to school, and how are you going to deal with some situations at school? How are you going to deal with some of the kids that are there? Well, let's think about these things. Rule number one. Let's remember we represent Christ. Some of you are already Christians, and some of you, I hope one day, will be thinking about becoming a Christian. And so we need to understand that when we are at school, and when we are with our friends, and when we're talking with our teachers, let's remember that we represent Christ. Here's a couple of easy passages. Look with me. Philippians chapter 1. We're going to Philippians chapter 1. The apostle writes for us in verse 27. Only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand fast in one spirit, with one mind striving together for the faith of the gospel. It's interesting that what the apostle wanted to know about these brethren is how they stood with regard to attitude and character before God and before Christ. And basically, he is saying to them, remember who you are. Let your conduct be worthy of one who is called a Christian. We can just never forget who we are in that way. In Ephesians chapter 1, there's a similar point. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 1, a similar point here that can be made. When the apostle says that I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called. Again, very much it's the idea of remember who you are. And if we are one who is saying that we are a Christian or one who is a follower of Christ, remember who you are. That's what people need to see in us more than anything, more than any trait or characteristic. They need to see and know that we represent Christ. Our conduct represents our character. And when people see you, they should see the light of Christ. Because at times we will stand out, and we are the ones who should stand out in a different way. And please understand that your example means a lot. And please understand that people see you. They do. And people recognize good character. And what they should see in all of us is a character representing Christ. And again, could I say, example means a lot. Jesus said so. There's another passage here in Matthew chapter 5 that's helpful for us to think about. Jesus truly is talking about the character of one who would be called a disciple. And in Matthew chapter 5, we begin reading in verse 14, verse 13 actually. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Verse 16. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Truly, we can be a light in the world. Or even as this text says, you are the salt of the earth. It's the idea that you might season the world in a favorable and pleasant way. Remember who you are. And when you go to school, remember the example that you set to so many others. Have some pride in your character. Not pride in a haughty way. No, that's not what we're talking about. But have some pride in who you are. And that as one who is representing Christ, you can stand tall in that. And we should. Your classmates and your teachers, they will grow to know who you are. And they may know your family, and they may know even where you go to church. They may know this about you. What are your actions showing others about who you are? Always represent Christ. Rule number two, no cheating. No cheating to get ahead. It's not right. It never has been right. Cheating is stealing, really. I tried to think for a while. I mean, what exactly is cheating? What's wrong with that? Well, it's stealing is what it is. You are stealing something that you do not have from someone who does. That's what you're doing when you're cheating. Stealing answers is no different than stealing money. And I think most everybody would understand there's something wrong with stealing money. But if you steal answers from someone else who has them, that's still cheating. It's still wrong. And you need to not be the aid in someone else's theft either. Oh, yeah, this can be hard. When your friend comes in having not done their homework and says, "Can I copy your answers?" Well, that's still cheating. And I don't think we're the ones that should be helping them cheat. You know, what will your explanation be when you both get caught? Because sooner or later, you always get caught. And I would suggest instead of helping them cheat, help them to learn the right way. Ephesians chapter 4. In Ephesians chapter 4, Paul has something to say about stealing. In Ephesians chapter 4 and in verse 28, "Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need." Now here's kind of one of those paradoxes. It's something that's just very different. We're going from cheating to helping. But to be able to help, we have to first have provided for ourselves in such a way a means of helping. So we may have to work and study and be prepared to answer the questions on the test or to help do or to do our homework. And when our friend says, "I didn't get mine done," let's teach them the things that they needed to learn. To be a child of God, cheating is just out of character for us, as stealing is out of character for us. In fact, this verse says that not only should we stop stealing from anyone else, but that we should learn our material so well that we can help others, that we might even become a tutor for someone else. And so that is, we should prepare ourselves in such a way to give something to others. Don't cheat. Well, as well, rule 3, no bullying. I never heard about bullying when I was growing up. Oh, there were bullies, no doubt. But now you hear about it a lot, and it's on TV. And it's a problem. There's no question about it. There's a problem. More and more people are talking about bullying these days. And I suppose that you need to be reminded, as we all should, that there is a temptation to have fun at someone else's expense. But you shouldn't do that, because that just wouldn't fit the character of Christ. And if we are the ones wanting to stand up for what's right and stand up for what Christ would stand up for, bullying just doesn't fit in there at all. Bullies thinks that it's cool when they mock someone else or when they make fun of someone else. But that's not who we can be. A long time ago, when I was in the fourth grade, I had a classmate named David Dunavant. David struggled in a lot of ways. And David was bigger than most of us because he had struggled through school. And I remember that he got picked on a lot. And he kind of sat by himself. And at recess, most of the time, he just played by himself. And he was not very happy. I remember that. And I don't recall ever being mean to David. I don't think I did, or that I was. But you know what I wish I had done? I just wish I'd been his friend, because he needed a friend. And so, well, that's just something to think about a little bit. You know, bullies sometimes think that they are big because they can beat up on someone who's small. But in so many ways, bullies are 100 times smaller than the ones that they pick on. There's a passage in Matthew where Jesus has something to say, I think, really just about kindness. Sometimes we call the passage the golden rule. Jesus didn't call it that, but man has kind of put that term on there, and I understand. It's just here really the idea how we act toward others. In Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12, Jesus said, "Whatever you want men to do to you, you also do to them, for this is the law and the prophets." Well, that's always been the attitude that God has wanted his people to have toward others. This idea of kindness. Treat people the way you would want to be treated. And so when we go to school, that's something for us to think about. And that's an attitude surely that we should have, treating others as we would want to be treated. And think about how that applies to how we act around others. I mean, are you afraid your friends won't like you for standing up for someone who is unpopular? I mean, what if you stood up for someone who was unpopular? What would your friends think about you? How would their reaction be toward you? I mean, if you're afraid of how your friends might respond if you were kind to someone else, you might need to think about who your friends are. You might need to make some different choices with regard to your friends. And maybe even you have to double check your own heart to make sure that it is as pure as it should be. You see, we can be examples. We can be lights to the world. We can show others what it is to be kind to other people. And so, of course, I don't even have to say don't be a bully, because that's not even in our mind. That's not where we are. We're completely opposite of that. Well, here's another rule. Rule number 4 to think about. Dress appropriately. In some ways, when speaking to Christians or children of Christians, in some ways, and there's a part of me that thinks, well, you don't have to talk about appropriate dress. This should just be a given for us. But I find we still need to talk about these things. And we should learn just some basic things about life, such things as every function in life has a dress that is appropriate. There's different kinds of dress appropriate for different times. I never wore a suit to school. That just didn't seem right or appropriate. But at the same time, there were some other things that I didn't wear either, because it would not be appropriate. Just like I think that it would raise your eyebrows if I came and stood before you to preach in a t-shirt and shorts and sandals. That just doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem appropriate for what we're doing here today. And likewise, when we go to school, there's certain dress that may or may not be appropriate. And could I suggest to you, young people, and some of you may already have jobs or you're thinking about jobs in the future, could I suggest that your future career will require dress that is considered to be appropriate? Okay, if you work at McDonald's, you're going to have to wear the same thing everybody else at McDonald's wears, whether you think it's cool or not. That'll be considered appropriate dress. And if you go somewhere else to work, there may be dress that's needed or appropriate. I heard of a fellow that I know recently went for a job interview, and it was a job in a shop, but he went to his interview with a t-shirt with holes in it and dirty jeans and tennis shoes. And he didn't get the job. And I've been told he couldn't understand why the interview didn't go well and why he didn't get the job. And about all I could think was, bless his heart. He just doesn't understand or get it that impressions mean something. And dress needs to be appropriate for what we're doing. And it's that way with school, too. Schools have dress codes. And like I said before, I thought at times, Christians shouldn't need to be told about proper dress. I mean, when there's a dress code that a school thinks, I would like to think we already meet that dress code and beyond with regard to propriety and modesty and things such as that. There are a couple of important areas I want to touch on. 1 Timothy chapter 2. Are you going there with me? 1 Timothy chapter 2. Now, here's a passage that says something about appropriate dress. 1 Timothy 2 and verse 9. "In like manner also, that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. It just kind of paints a picture for us of an attitude and character accompanied by appropriate dress of one reflecting godliness. And godliness is a requirement for girls and for guys. We all have to be concerned about those things. Modesty entails the idea of not calling attention to oneself. And you know, you can do that with too much clothing or too little clothing. I think we should understand. Clothing that reveals too much will for sure get attention, but not the good kind of attention. I mean, what's wrong with revealing clothing? Well, everything. It does not profess godliness in any way. And it causes those of the opposite sex to look at us in a way and think things that is not good and not appropriate. And so if we dress in that way, we're causing some others to think about things that they should not. And those who are old enough know and understand exactly what I'm talking about. And so dressing in a way that is so fancy or high dollar and flashy, well, that can be a problem too. We may be covered well. Everything is covered in that regard. But we can still call attention to ourselves, the wrong kind of attention. Attention that comes only by appearance is wrong, and it's so shallow. And so we need to think about how we dress, that it is appropriate from a modesty standpoint, that we don't cause undue attention because of the flesh that we're showing off, and that we don't overdress in such a way that it makes people just look at us and cause attention in that way. And then there's fashions and styles, too. And I don't know a whole lot about fashions and styles, but some of you probably do. You don't always have to wear the latest and the greatest when it comes to clothing. You don't have to wear the most expensive. What is most important to you? It's something to think about. When it comes to your clothing and dress, what is most important to you? Is it getting attention by what we wear, or is it who we are that is most important? Is it the material things that matters the most? It's reasonable to think about these things. The true value of your life is not measured by your stuff. Look at Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12. And in verse 15, where Jesus says, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." Simple passage. That what really matters in life is not things, it's not personal wealth, or even how we dress. And that's why Jesus was saying, listen to this, take heed, beware. And we can be pulled in so quickly to doing and being something that we're not, feeling the need of looking like everybody else, dressing like everybody else, when maybe that's not what is best. Maybe that's not what is right. We can all be pulled in by the interest and the desires of what the world thinks. But that's not what is most important to us, professing godliness. And rule number 5, avoid getting caught up in being popular. I know everybody wants to have friends. Everybody wants to be popular to some degree. Doesn't matter if you're young or if you're old. That's still something that is of interest to us. Popularity is the almighty dollar of school. Some have traded an awful lot just to be popular among people. Everybody wants it. Some will do anything to get it. But the problem with being popular is the sacrifices that you might make to get there. If you have to use foul language to get in with a crowd, is it worth it? Really? Is it worth it? And if you have to give up good and loyal friends to be popular among the masses, is it worth that? And if you have to drink or play with drugs to be popular, is it worth that? Really? Is it worth that? If you have to bring shame upon the Lord to be popular, is it worth that? I think not. Really, for all of those, I think not. I think we need to be careful about choosing our friends. I would say that. Go with me to the Old Testament, the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 13. Listen to what the wise man said. Proverbs 13 and verse 20. He who walks with the wise grows wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm. It's like he's saying, choose your friends carefully. Look for those who make wise choices and do wise things. That might rub off on you. But if you choose to be companions of fools, well, you just might become a fool. Look in Proverbs as well, here to chapter 22. Chapter 22 at verse 24, beginning. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Do not associate with one easily angered. Or you may learn his ways and get yourself ensnared. Be careful about who you hang around with, because their character is very likely to rub off on you. It just kind of works that way. You become very much like the ones you hang out with. And when we find those who use good judgment and wise judgment, that just might rub off on us. We better hang with them. And if we hang with those that do foolish things, let's be aware. Now, we might just be like them. And I know, I've said the same thing. I've said, no, I'm not going to be like them. They're not going to affect the way I think. But you know what? God says that it does affect how we think. There's really no argument here to make. You can't argue with me about it. You can't argue with your parents about it. Because in essence, when we say that the character of our friends does not matter and does not rub off on us, we're arguing with God. Because he says it does matter. And then rule number 6. Get involved in life. Get involved in school, but prioritize some things. In school, you will have a multitude of options and opportunities to be involved. There are all kinds of school functions and activities, and you need to get involved in some of these. You know, there are great opportunities to make new friends and to learn new skills, to become more well-rounded, so to speak. And these can be really good things. When our girls were growing up, Stacy and Jody were very different in this regard. Stacy was involved in everything, or at least tried to be. I mean, we had to put a limit. You know, if you want to join this club, you've got to stop this one. You got to quit this one over. No, I can't. No, I really believe you can. You're going to have to choose. You can't do all of these things. And so we had to limit. Because if she did everything she wanted to do and everything that she thought she could do, she would have time for nothing else. And that's a problem. You need to think about these things. When you're in school and as you get into junior high, some of you are, and getting into high school, there's some incredible opportunities of growth and learning and making new friends. You can take advantage of these things, but you have to set some priorities of what is really important, what is most important. And parents, listen. Sometimes you have to set some rules about those things and help your children learn to set priorities. Young folks, never forget that your number one priority in life is serving the Lord. It has to be. For all eternity, it has to be your number one priority in life. And so you can look at doing sports and being involved in music and clubs and class offices, and these things can be helpful and fulfilling and fun. But we have to put some things in order. Don't get too many irons in the fire, because you'll be effective at none of them. And if you do too many things, you'll forget about what's most important. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Matthew 6. That's what has to be most important. And parents, I speak to you for just a moment. Parents, help your children to learn these things and to remember these things. All that we've talked about, but when it comes to setting priorities, you are the ones who have the influence and ability to teach about setting priorities. We said at the beginning of the lesson that spiritual development of our children is the most important aspect of their growth, and I really believe that, and I think you do too. What are we going to do this school year to reinforce that, to teach that? Are we going to allow our children to become so involved with other activities that they miss Bible studies? They miss worship services so they can be at ball games, they can be at club meetings, they can be away with their friends? Are we going to let them do that? Or are we going to teach them priorities about godliness and serving God? Help them make decisions based on the right priorities. Parents, what are we going to do? It's in this way that we have incredible influence and teaching ability with our children when we teach them priorities that will last them a lifetime. I'm not sure why it is that we would think that when our children are coming up, that if we don't teach them the importance of assembling with the saints and Bible studies and coming to worship services, why we would think that when they're adults, they will be any more than what we've taught them to be. And in fact, what I've seen most of the time is they do even less. Something to think about. Are we going to encourage worldly behavior in our children by spoiling them with every wish when they need that new $150 pair of tennis shoes? Are we going to run out and buy those every time? And when they have to have the latest design dresses and jeans and whatever, what are we going to do? How are we going to deal with those situations? Or are we going to teach them some things, some truths about contentment? And maybe teach them some principles about work and earning some money? What are we going to do? Are we going to help them to see the importance of Bible class lessons? Are Bible class lessons going to have priority over biology class lessons? What is going to be most important? And I think we struggle with this. We need to teach our children what is most important in life in these ways. And first and foremost, are we God's people representing Him in the world? Will they learn that from our example and from our teaching? What are we going to do this school year, parents? How are we going to lead and instruct and encourage our children to be more godly? Because back to school is a great challenge for our children, but quite frankly, it's a challenge for us too in a lot of ways, because we will be pressed with time and decisions and issues in life regarding school and raising our children. And if we are not careful, we can forget about what is most important, and what we need to teach our children is to trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding, but in all ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your paths straight. This is what we need to teach our children. And young people, I can promise you with great assurance that when we make this the pattern of our life, God will keep us, God will bless us, and He will help us with issues of life. And He'll help us to grow up. Be with Him. Just some things to think about. Back to school time. Everybody reacts a little different. Some are excited. Some are happy. Some are dreading the day when they have to go back to that school building. But it's reality. It's going to happen. It's this week or next week. You're going to be back in that schoolhouse. How are you going to act? What are you going to do? What will people see in you? But it's not just about school. It's about how we live every day. And there are some here who have become Christians. There are some who may be thinking about becoming Christians. And there are some here that we want to teach about becoming Christians. And we have to keep doing that. And so, once again, we remind everyone here of the need of making some choices in life. Decisions about godliness, godly living, serving the Lord. And if you need to become a child of God today, and you've come to understand what that is in faith and in full obedience, baptism in the name of Jesus for remission of sins, We want to encourage you not only to think about those things, but to respond. If you're a child of God that has struggled with sin, we're praying that you will repent of your sin. Pray forgiveness. Can we help you in some way in your relationship with the Lord? Can we help you? Would you come as we stand and sing?